Good afternoon. With the members that are here, please come forward and we'll begin our meeting. I believe we have a quorum when the members get their seats, so with that, I would ask Representative Finstead if he would be prepared to move the minutes of the last meeting.
So moved.
Representative Finstead moves the minutes of the previous meeting. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Motion is carried. The minutes are adopted. And members and people that are here today, today we're going to have a presentation dealing with the dairy industry. The Minnesota Milk has arranged for a group of their people to be here today, and we designated this as Dairy Day at the Capitol. We had a resolution last on the House floor recognizing this as Dairy Day, and so we are not going to be acting on any bills today, but we're going to have a discussion. We're going to have an overview from the Department of Agriculture as to their view of the dairy industry and what they have in mind for needs and things we should be looking at. We're also going to have testimony from several members or people representing the Minnesota Milk Producers Association as to some of the things that they feel are important for the legislature to be looking at. There has been some bills drafted and introduced in regarding dairy. They have not been specifically referred to this committee. Some of them have to the Agriculture Finance Committee, and a couple of them to the Tax Committee, based on what was included in the bills. But we were meeting today, and they were having their day on the Hill, so we thought it would be good to let them have some presentation and for us to listen to, and so recognize the importance of dairy to our state. So with that, the first person we have to make a presentation to us is Perry Osnes, the Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture, to give some input from the perspective of the department. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Osnes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Perry Osnes, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. Appreciate the opportunity to come here on a Dairy Day on the Hill to talk about some of the dairy activities the department is involved in right now. I'm going to run through a list of things, and certainly if there are questions, I'd be happy to take those. But certainly when we look at what we do at the department, I think there's probably no single industry that we are trying to do more for than the dairy industry. And given the challenges that they have, we certainly are trying to do everything we can to devote the resources that we have that are devoted to dairy or in any area, other areas that we can help to help them move forward. One of the issues that you probably heard about last year that we feel pretty good about is the progress we've made on the Quality Counts program, which is trying to do some things education-wise to help our dairy producers lower their somatic cell count. I'm sure this committee has heard numbers before, but according to the university, Minnesota dairy producers are losing about $53 million in potential dollars leaving that on the table as a result of high somatic cell counts. Back last summer, we put together a group made up of the department, the university, processors, and producers to see if we could develop some educational materials and kind of a campaign to raise awareness of this with dairy producers and help encourage them to look at reducing somatic cell count. And we've got some good news to report on that. When we look at the average somatic cell count average for the Minnesota DHIA-enrolled dairy herds, when you compare December of 2003 to December of 2002, we saw a drop from 390,000 to 333,000. Now, certainly we're not at the level we want to be, I think that shows some progress. In fact, that figure is 50,000 lower than any month in the years 2000 through 2002. I do want to point out that somatic cell count, as I'm sure you are aware, can be influenced by many factors, so I don't want to suggest that it's solely due to these efforts. But I do think that this program is having some impact. We've heard a number of positive comments, both from producers and processors, regarding the fact that this has raised the awareness of this issue, and there are a lot more producers paying attention to this. So we are currently looking at ways to continue that program, because we don't want this to be a one-time shot. We want to make sure that this is a continual type of thing, and that we can reach a goal of lower somatic cell count over the next couple of years. Another area that we've been focusing on in the last couple of years, more specifically to dairy, is in the area of risk management. The Minnesota Milk Producers made a request to the department through the MDI initiative to use some of the dollars for what's called a price makers curriculum. And really what this is a training course to help dairy farmers understand the fundamentals of price risk management, help them develop milk marketing plans. And we've been working with them on developing the curriculum. There's going to be workshops starting later this month in 5 locations around the state. Basically what this is, it's going to be a 6-week course for dairy producers that are interested in this. And then I believe the intent down the road is try to gauge the interest in continuing this with some dairy milk marketing clubs with those producers that have participated in this. These workshops are going to be in 5 locations, and Representative Heigerk, and I think I should let you know that one of those is going to be in Charlie's Cafe, so we're trying to bring some additional business your way.
Cakes and rolling.
So anyway, we're excited about that, and I appreciate the leadership that Minnesota Milk has shown in taking this and working on developing this curriculum, because I think it is a way to help our dairy producers manage some of these price fluctuations we've seen the last couple years. We've also been, and I think you've been made aware of this before, but we've been working with USDA's Risk Management Agency to see if there are some risk management tools that we can provide to dairy producers in Minnesota. There's a program called Adjusted Gross Revenue that has been developed by the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture that was really designed for their dairy producers and some of their specialty crop growers. And we made a case last fall to RMA to get Minnesota to be a pilot state for that. We didn't quite have the numbers, the actuary numbers established to rate this sort of program, so they asked us to take another look at that. We're working on that right now, and our goal and our hope is to have something in place by next year that, again, could be a tool for dairy producers if they so choose to use these tools. I don't want to suggest that this is going to solve everything, but I think what we're trying to do is provide as much training and information and tools available to our dairy producers to manage some of these price risks. Just an update on the Dairy Business Planning Grant update, which most of you are familiar with and appreciate the funding in the past. Thus far, in fiscal year 04, we've approved 16 business planning grants. The average dollar amount of those grants are about $4,000. And just to let you know what these dollars are going for, some of it is for planning for some small-scale expansion in the area of 50 cows or so. Some of it's going to do some planning on how to restructure debt. And there are also those that are looking at some on-farm dairy processing. So I think we are seeing good demand for those dollars, and hopefully we won't be turning any money back on those. I don't think we will. The dairy profitability teams, I won't go into a lot of detail on that other than to let you know that Dave Winand, who's the program manager for that, who is here, recently put together this report for 2004. And David, maybe we should just pass that out, if you don't mind, to the committee, just so you can take a look at that at your convenience. Another issue I want to update you on relates to the cost of hauling milk. You're probably aware that last summer, at the request of Minnesota Milk, we did a study to take a look at what are the true costs of hauling milk, and are there ways that we could kind of squeeze some efficiencies out of the system. We did a report that showed that on average, Minnesota processors, dairy processors, pay about 58 cents per hundredweight to haul milk to the processing plant. And I think the issue is there an interest within the industry and producers to try to find ways to squeeze some efficiencies out of the system. We've had a couple meetings with industry leaders and with dairy producers. At this point, we're still looking into that. I think there's still some work that needs to be done. There are some companies out there that have the technology to do these sort of things. Our role is just to try to encourage, if there's opportunities for this, to encourage the industry to work together, and we're certainly willing to do that to see if there's ways that we can look at some collaborative mill calling type of ideas. I'm sure the committee has heard, and we certainly have as well, that access to capital is a big concern for dairy producers, particularly those that are looking at trying to modernize their operations or add cows or try to make sure that they can comply with feedlot rules, that sort of thing. I know there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of work that's been done over the summer by Representative Erdahl, Representative Demmer, and others that have looked at some ideas. We have had some discussions over the last few months with the Department of Economic Development, as well as just looking internally in the department to see if there are some dollars that we can redirect toward these areas. And I just kind of wanted to give you an update on where they are at. We're trying to model after the Minnesota Investment Fund that DEED has, do something called a Dairy Investment Fund. And the whole concept is to provide some dollars to local economic development officials and communities that want to do things to enhance dairy and do something very similar to the Minnesota Investment Fund to allow them to have access to some of those dollars to provide low-interest loans to producers that are needing to make upgrades or modernizing their facilities. We are talking with the governor's office on this. I don't have a bill or anything at this point, but I wanted to make you aware that we've gotten a lot of interest from DEED in doing something like this. There's a model that we can look at, and we're hoping to have something that can be approved and have for your review yet this year. The second area is that we are looking at ways that we can take existing RFA programs and pool some of the existing balances and maybe put them into a dairy upgrade loan program. Give us some flexibility so that if we are seeing the needs that we are with dairy producers trying to modernize their operations, that we can take some of the balances that we may have in some of these accounts, pool them into a new account that could be used for some of these low-interest loans. And again, we're working on that right now. We hope to have some language drafted in the near future. Both of these initiatives are using existing dollars, and what we are trying to do is find ways to use the funds that we have and use them in such a way to provide greater flexibility for some of these access to capital issues. The last thing I'll just mention is that I think you're all aware that Governor Plenty appointed a livestock advisory task force. That task force has met three times since it's been put together. A lot of the same issues that you have heard of over the years as committee members here, such as access to capital, the concern over the uncertainty in the permitting process, and the concern over how to deal with local governance issues are all issues that the task force is taking a look at, and I would expect some recommendations forthcoming on that. I know there's been a lot of talk about the task force looking at doing away with local control. That certainly is not what they're looking at doing, but I think we all would agree that there's probably better ways to improve the process so that there's greater certainty for those producers that want to modernize their operations. Mr. Chairman, I will just stop there and see if there's any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Osmus, and I'm glad to hear that the department has a concern for the dairy industry and recognizes that it's an important part of our agriculture, and hopefully we can work with the department on some of these things to further our dairy industry. There's questions of Mr. Osmus. Representative Heigerken, did you have?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, Mr. Oz, it's good having you back with us, and I know you did a nice job over there with the sugar beet people. I was talking to last night, and they were sad to see you leave. My question has to do with what was discussed yesterday. I think all of us sat there, and we looked at some of the things that the state does in financing the beginner farm program, for example, the expansion of existing dairies if they want to add on. The problem that we have there is there a possibility of going back to the caps that we have? For example, the beginner farmer has $125,000, which isn't very much in this day and age. I had in the last 2 weeks, I had over four. I have four people that have contacted me about the beginning farm program. They're interested in getting into dairy. So there are enough people out there. I think if we can get a program set up for them, but we need the state to really, again, help us there, and I realize I'm glad that we got you back. But we need to look at that, and we also need to look at the caps of restructuring loans or with the, of adding livestock as well. I think the caps there, I'm not exactly sure. I think that the max is 465 or 469,000 there, but we need to look at that to really get this program going and get more farmers into it. The other thing that I want the comment on is you mentioned it getting deed involved, and I like that. I've done economic development in small communities, and we have TIFs. The state has five different TIF programs that we work with. I think that in itself, as long as we're getting into the deed right now, would work with some of the 50, 60 co-operators. They want to go to 885. There's tax incentives there, et cetera. But if we could do that, you know, and get that involved, then dairy would help. But you, just your comments on it.
Yeah. Mr. Osnes, do you have a response to his statements or question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Heigarken, certainly the issue of caps on the RFA loan programs have been discussed in the past. I understand they were discussed yesterday by the Ag Finance Committee. And I guess from my perspective, we would be more than willing to work with the committee or individual legislators to take a look at that. We want to make sure that the programs that we have available are updated with the times, and certainly we know that times have changed, and perhaps some of those caps need to be relooked at again. So I don't think there's anything etched in stone that we can't re-examine and see if we can make some changes to accommodate some of the new demands and some of the structure changes that are occurring with dairy producers. Regarding your second point related to deed, you know, I've appreciated their willingness to try to work with us in some of these ideas, because really what we're trying to do is stimulate economic development in these local communities. Dairy cows add economic development. I've seen figures of $5,000 per cow in direct impact up to $13,000 in indirect. So we know that there's a huge impact there, so we have a lot at stake, and I think the state has a lot at stake to make sure that we have dairy cows in the state, because there's a benefit for all.
Thank you. Is there any further questions? Representative Pennis?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Honest. Do you have a map, or could provide us with a map of the density of the dairy industry throughout the state of Minnesota? You know, yeah, I know they're telling me where it is, but if you have one, I would appreciate it. And then, second part of my question is. Do you foresee any impact on the dairy industry or farming industry at all with some of the other programs that we are environmentally putting in place now, whether it be CREP, purchase of wildlife management area, acreage, impaired waters, and so on down the line?
Mr. Osmus.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Pennis, on the first question, we do have a map listing of where our dairy farms are, and you know, it's no surprise, but the majority of them are kind of along that I-94 corridor from Otter Tail County on down to the cities and down to Rochester, that kind of part of the state, but I'd be happy to provide that for you. Regarding the other issue related to, I think, the impact of conservation or environmental regulations as it relates, I'm not sure I can. Maybe you could rephrase your question, Representative. I could try to answer it.
Representative Pennis?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Mr. Honest. There are several initiatives that are taking place, and such as CRAP, such as purchase of more wildlife management areas, maybe conservancy acreage, et cetera. And I guess I'm asking you for probably something that you can't supply at this time. But this is going to have an impact on our farming operations, whether it be dairy or wheat and beets and or whatever. So I guess we need to look at the whole picture. I don't know if you want to comment on it or not.
Mr. Osnes, do you wish to respond?
Chairman, Representative Pennis, I think the one thing I would hope we would try to accomplish when we look at some of these conservation programs is make sure that there are some opportunities for those that want to utilize some of that pasture land or whatever that may be set aside for some grazing or that sort of thing, because that's an important part of the dairy industry, and I'd hate to see some land that could be utilized for some of those purposes and still protect the environment be limited to using that down the road.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any other questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Osnes, and maybe I don't know if you can stay around in case there is issues develop along the way, but thank you.
Sure.
The next presenter we have on our program is Gene Bissick of Manoman, Minnesota. Mr. Bissick, welcome to the committee, and please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am Gene Bissick. I'm a dairy farmer from northwestern Minnesota, town of Manoman. And our family dairy farm, we've got about 100 cows milking and about 600 acres of cropland. I've been doing it for about 27 years now. In fact, I grew up on that farm, and then I took about 7 years off to go to college, and I served as a lieutenant in the United States Army. But I did come back. I enjoyed the business. And at that time, 27 years ago, I felt it was a cross between a way of life and a business. But I think in our day and age now, it's become more and more a business. And I'd like to focus my testimony basically on the Minnesota Dairy Initiative, the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program. This program has provided a lot of technical assistance to a lot of the dairy farmers in the state. There are a lot more dairy farmers, though, that need this type of assistance. I think the future of our industry, the dairy industry, is going to depend a lot on what kind of decisions that dairy farmers make today, whether they're older dairy farmers that are trying to decide whether a family member should be coming into the business. As in my case, I didn't have a family member to take over, but I want my operation to continue, so we actually utilized the Dairy Diagnostics Program, which is one of those programs funded by the Dairy Initiative, to help us restructure the business so that we could hire some outside help, and hopefully that outside person will continue that the dairy operation, even though it won't be a family business anymore per se. It'll still be a family-sized business in that the next owners and operators can continue it rather than my family. The advisory teams that you hear a lot about, the Dairy Diagnostics Program, is an extremely important part of the Minnesota Dairy Initiative. We can assemble teams of true professionals in the business, such as veterinarians, livestock nutritionists, crop specialists, housing and equipment experts, environmental technicians, put these people on a team and go out to a dairy farm one-on-one and analyze the dairy operation, and then come up with a prescription for that farm, how they can maybe make some changes and improvements to increase their profitability and hopefully in the long run have a better quality of life. It would enhance the communities that they live in, and I think it would provide for a stronger, more vital future in the dairy industry. The planning grants that the Dairy Initiative help support has been mentioned, and these are again are a vital aspect of it. In so many cases, dairy farmers need this outside help to plan for their future. So I think that's another area that we need to continue to support. And then the Dairy Development and Profitability Enhancement Program is also positioned as a cornerstone for coordinating several other programs in the state. And again, some of these programs have been mentioned, such as the Quality Count Program. The somatic cell count issue in the state has got to continue to get better. I think the consumers of dairy products want quality products, and we as producers have to provide that. By having help from the state, it'll be that much better. The Environmental Quality Assurance Program, which has been started by the Minnesota Milk Producers Association, is a good program to ensure that our environmental stewardship is being upheld. It helps to obtain financing for some of the farmers. It gives them technical assistance determining how to make sure that the stewardship is there. And then, of course, the Price Makers Workshop is another program that is coordinated by the Minnesota Dairy Initiative. And under that program, we as dairy farmers can somewhat ensure that we have a decent price for our product. We really took a hit the last couple of years with the prices being the lowest I've ever seen in 27 years. My paychecks were getting smaller and smaller, and that's really difficult to keep going. And in fact, now that we have better prices, it's not that we're going to maybe make a little bit more money. We're going to have to try to catch up. So the Price Makers program, I think, is extremely important. I personally have done a little bit of the work that the Price Makers will promote, but there are so many dairy farmers out there that are that don't know anything about really how to ensure themselves a good price, or how to basically guarantee themselves a floor price at least. So that's, I think that's an extremely important program. House File 1665 would expand the funding for the Dairy Initiative Program. There are a lot more farmers, as I said before, that need to be assisted. And by expanding this program, we can get more teams out, we can get more technical teams out, and it would probably also provide some resources for retaining some of the qualified personnel that the Extension Service had that are no longer available through the Extension Service. And I think this is also critical to keep these people that are qualified in the business available to the dairy farmers that need it. So the Dairy Initiative continues to grow. It's extremely crucial to our dairy industry, and it's highly effective. As I said, I've been on the receiving end of several of the programs, so I personally know that it can help. And by continuing it, maybe we'll get a few other dairy farmers to come down and talk to you again in the future. Mr. Chair, thanks for accommodating myself and the Minnesota milk producers. And we appreciate your concerns about the dairy industry. We only hope that you can do what you can to help us. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Bezik. You mentioned the Price Maker program. Are you talking about the forward pricing or futures market and so forth? Could you maybe explain that a little further, in case some of the aren't aware of it or know the details? Or
Mr. Chair,
could you do that?
I can try. The Price Makers Workshop is a program that it's an educational program that we're going to try to get dairy farmers to the workshop and teach them about the future, how to contract their milk. In some cases, they may not want to contract their milk. They may be better off just selling on the cash market. We've had federal assistance in protecting our price to a certain degree, but we can't always count on that. We have to take that initiative ourselves as dairy farmers. So there are several options that producers can take, and of course one of them would be a contracting directly with their processor, the people they sell the milk to, so that they can contract the price for the future, whether it be 2 months or 12 months. Yeah, other opportunities are actually going directly into trading with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, whether you be purchasing futures, selling futures, buying or selling options. The thing is, I'm not trained in that area, and I can't really afford to hire a broker to do all of it for me either, and I'm not sure whether I can trust his decisions or his advice. So by having these educational programs, I can learn a lot more about it, and it would help me make decisions on what kind of marketing I should do. The Price Makers Workshop will have a trading game as part of it. In other words, the participants in the programs will be pretending to sell their milk either on a cash basis, on a contract basis, or an options futures. And by doing this over a six-week period of time, they can then hopefully see that there may be benefits to marketing their milk rather than just selling it. Is that okay?
Thank you. Representative Harder, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bisley. To what extent have changes in the Minnesota Extension Service affected extension educators' participation on the dairy profitability enhancement teams? You indicated that perhaps the program needed some additional assistance. I just wondered to what extent you've seen a change.
Mr. Bisick, do you wish to comment on our question?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Harder, yes. There were several qualified extension personnel in the dairy industry that are no longer working for the Extension Service. And their resources are not available to the dairy farmers in the country now, at least not directly through the Extension Service. Some of them have taken on roles maybe with ties through the Extension Service or the university. But there are a lot of educational programs that probably won't be available now, but fewer extension, there are still extension personnel that are qualified in the dairy industry, I mean, but there are fewer of them. And it's the numbers. When you talk about a large state like the state of Minnesota, someone in Rochester can't help me up in northwestern Minnesota. And the extension personnel in northwestern Minnesota have to cover a huge territory. And it's not only that, but it's the number of people that the availability of the number that is going to be, I think, detrimental. Does that answer your question?
Representative Harder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bizik, so I'm understanding you to say that in addition to the loss of participation by extension educators on the dairy profitability enhancement teams, the dairy industry and I don't know who else may experience a loss in other educational opportunities as well because of these changes?
Mr. Bizik.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Harder. I guess in my opinion, I think there will be other areas. But it's changed, and it's been done. I mean, it's not that we can go back, but I think it's good that you be aware of the situation. To replace the resources that we've lost through the Extension Service, the Dairy and Development Profitability Enhancement Program, I think by expanding it would help to replace some of those resources. There are other people that can be put on these teams of professionals to go visit the dairy farmers. It may not be the extension personnel, but the Dairy Initiative Program can help make up some of that void, I think. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Representative Blaine, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bizik, it's nice to have you here and nice to hear you speak. And support of Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program. And obviously this committee has looked at this program before. We've talked about it and the positive effects that it has. And I've also been very familiar with this program since its inception, and have also been a very strong supporter. And right now, I believe that's probably of all the things that we're doing right now to have a positive impact on the dairy industry, I think that this would probably be number one on my list. Saying that, and if you agree with me on that, I think that one of the things that we have to do, or I feel compelled that we do, is to get more producers, more of our fellow dairy producers in the state enrolled in this program and engaged in this program, because in my estimation right now, I think one of our biggest limiting factors for success of our current dairy producers out there is business management skills. And I think that this is one of the greatest tools we have in helping our current dairy producers and our dairy producers to come in the future to be better business managers and be true businessmen. Because you're right, the industry is a great industry, but it is not a way of life. This has to be handled as a business. And so, Mr. Bizik, I guess I'd like to ask you if you would share with us how you got involved with this, with the Dairy Development Profitability Enhancement Program, and give us your viewpoint on how we can make this project and this product more well known to the rest of our dairy producers in the state, and what we can do here as a body to and as citizens out in our districts to help get more of our dairy producers engaged into this program. Thank you.
Mr. Bissick, do you have any response?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bland, I'm thrilled that you asked me that question. For one thing, I now have been working with the MDI as a coordinator in northwestern Minnesota. I've been assembling teams. I've been talking to a lot of different dairy farmers, and I've seen the positive impact that the program can have because it helped our dairy operation tremendously. We got into it just by seeing a brochure, I guess, at some dairy meeting someplace and being a little bit curious about it. Thought we could improve our situation, you know, and so I called up the person whose name was on it, and you know, he explained the program to me, and yeah, it was something that we needed to do. We needed to improve the production on the farm, the health of the cows, the efficiency, and the business aspect of it, the record keeping of financial records is something that we did it. We had a computer, and we, you know, towards the end of the year, we started entering our expenses and our revenues and for time to prepare our taxes. But they showed us the importance of knowing on a monthly basis, if not more often, just how well the business is doing. And like I say, we're not a large operation. We've got 100 cows, but to know from month to month whether, you know, you've got some certain bills coming up, to know what how much it costs to feed a cow each day. Sometimes you can shop around for different fees. There are ways to make the business more profitable. The premiums that we get for our milk, the semantic cell count premium, which I mentioned earlier, is a tremendous way of increasing profitability. The genetics of the animals. There's so many things that can be gained from having good records. And this is the key to the dairy diagnostic team going out. They basically cannot be a participant unless they have good records. And so the adult farm management program is a real strong part of it. They're not required to be enrolled in an adult farm management program, but I think 99.9% of them are. And so they not only have the benefits of that program, there's usually financial advisors on the team too. And that financial advisor then can also give advice from a different perspective, just how well the business is doing, from a profitability standpoint, balance sheet, so forth. Does that answer your question?
Representative Bland, did you have further?
Mr. Bissick, is there anything that you can think of that we can do to help get the message out about the success of this program? Because, you know, when I look down at the things that we do down here in the legislature that deal with ag and that deal with the dairy industry in particular, that we can have a positive impact, I don't find anything else that we can do that will give us as great a return on our investment of time or money as this program. And so I'm just wondering, is there, do you, as a team leader and myself, I've been a facilitator too, and being very involved with this, I'm just wondering if, do you see anything in your area up there that holds producers back from engaging, or do, you know, is there something that we could change or do different that would help to get the more people engaged, or do we need to do a better job of promoting this program? Are we running into people who did not know it existed after so many years here now?
Mr. Bissick?
Mr. Chair, Representative Blaine, I'm sorry I missed that part of your earlier question, but I think just by the fact that the state of Minnesota is supporting the dairy industry, and if that word gets out, that's going to have a big impact on people's perception. A lot of the dairy farmers that I've dealt with now have negative attitudes about the dairy business. And I think when they start reading articles, positive articles about the dairy business, about the dairy industry, about the fact that their representatives in St. Paul care about their situation, I think that's going to have a major impact. There are some that have not heard about it. I've done a lot of telephone calling, and there are some that haven't heard about it because it hasn't probably been publicized. Or if it has been publicized, they just haven't really been watching for it. You know, they just haven't noticed it. So one-on-one contacting, I think, is going to certainly put the word out there. And when I talk to them, I can explain it to them, more so than just a brochure. So if we had more people that were willing to, you know, just explain the program, call producers and talk to them. However, there are a lot of them that still have the negative attitude, that feel that no matter what can be or what is done, that things probably won't get that much better. But I guess I, for one, feel that if we keep calling them, keep talking about it, that eventually they might see. And, of course, farmers talking to farmers is probably the best way of promoting it. I mean, you know, to promote itself. But there will always be some farmers that will not fight. I think I have that gut feeling, and I hate to say it, but I think that's going to be true.
Well, thank you, Mr. Busick. Representative Erdahl, I have four more names here, and then we probably need to try and keep our questions and answers brief because we have several other people want to be on the program. But Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Swenson. Mr. Busick, you know, one of the bills on dairy that I authored has to do with putting another $1 million into the development profitability enhancement teams. What effect do you think another $1 million would have in your program?
Well, it's definitely going to be a positive effect. The budget that we have to work with in northwestern Minnesota is pretty tight. I mean, we can do only limited things. The Price Makers Workshop, for example, is an area that you can't just have these programs without paying for them, and there aren't the public funds for them, so the individual producers have to pay for the program. Well, a lot of these producers feel that they don't know anything about the program, and they're not going to just go and spend $100 to go to the program and not feel confident that they're going to get something back for that $100. If there were enough funds, we could at least compensate them for some of their expenses so that they may come to these programs. The teams, we have to be limited as to who we can have on these teams because we just don't have the funds to pay the professionals to be members of the team. So additional money is certainly going to help. And we could also have more dairy farmers, then we could expand the program to more dairy farmers without worrying about whether we got the money to do it. Does that answer your question, Mr. Erdahl?
Thank you.
Representative Demmer, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is actually a follow-up to Representative Harder's question about the Extension Service. You know, many of us are very concerned about that and interested in the changes and how they affect us. You mentioned that some programs that aren't available to you any longer that were before. Can you give us an example of a program through Extension that you've used in the past or even programs that are not now available that you can't get?
Mr. Busick?
Mr. Chair, I'm getting a little bit lost here. This is who I'm talking to. I'm sorry. One example would be the Price Makers type of a program. The Extension Office used to offer, in the past, they had offered marketing programs, milk marketing, crop marketing, and so forth. And it's been a number of years since that had been offered. Another one was the financial assistance that we got through the, and I realize it doesn't have to be a dairy expert to provide that, but there were financial assistance that could be provided. And the people that had the dairy experience can relate to a dairy farmer a lot more than a person that has only cropping background when it comes to financial planning and so forth. The nutritional aspect of it. There are a lot of private nutritionists out there, but a private nutritionist usually has something to sell, whereas a expert through the Extension Service gave you good, honest advice on how to feed the cows. Acting as an advocate for other resources, whether it be housing or equipment, genetics, a lot of these areas that I felt used to come from a neutral party as an Extension Service now has to be located through a private business. And sometimes there are slants when it's a private individual that you deal with. Does that answer your question?
Demmer?
Yeah.
Short, if we can go.
Yeah. These changes, you mentioned this hasn't been available for a few years. I'm more interested in the things that are available as of July 1st of this last year when the change came to the regional centers. Those kind of changes are the ones I'm really interested in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I guess I can't really answer that directly. I have been taking advantage of a lot of the programs earlier. More recent years, since the dairy or the Minnesota Dairy Initiative started, I took advantage of that program, and I can't answer that.
Okay, thank you, Representative Otto. Did you have a question?
I try to be really fast. Thank you.
Yeah, we need to move along here because I've got several, you know, we have several other people that want to get on the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
In 45 minutes.
Mr. Bissick, very quickly, sometimes up here we probably think we have a lot of wisdom in that you're out in the field doing the work. So question for you is if we could change two things to help your industry, what would they be?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lotto, give us a better price for our milk. Give us more help, more labor, better labor source. Does that answer your question?
Thank you. And Representative Harder, did you have a further
question? Yes, briefly, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Mr. Bezek, as you and Representative Blaine were having your exchange about the Dairy Profitability Enhancement Program and promoting it and now with additional funding in the on the table here, I just wanted to remind you, and I know that dairy producers across the state have been appreciative of the fact that we were able to keep funding for the program level unscathed during tight budgetary times. And I think that's the highest endorsement the legislature can give a program when you have a $4.5 billion shortfall and are able to maintain funding on a program that speaks pretty highly of the perception that we as legislators have of the effectiveness of the program.
Were you looking for a response?
No. Huh? It'll be short.
Okay. Representative Markwart, did you have a question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick question for Mr. Bezek. I see here on page 5 of this report here on the program, it says that there were 543 dairy farms that participated in the program. And in relation to what Representative Blaine was saying, what percent is it that participates in the program? I mean, what percentage of the dairy producers are participating? And so which percent do we have to go out and see if we can get involved?
Mr. Bissick, you know the answer. I believe we have about 6,000 dairy farms in the state at this time, and the numbers have been going down, but that's the last figure I heard was approximately 6,000.
So, Mr. Chair, it would be less than 10% then.
Do you agree with that?
Mr. Chair, yes, I do.
Yeah.
10%.
Okay. Representative Cornish?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bissick, when the news of the Ag Extension Service cutback came down to farmer level, what reason did you hear at the farm level? What were the reasons for the cutback in service? Was it financial or was it a policy decision? What did you folks hear?
Mr. Bissick, do you have an answer for that?
I'm going to keep it real short, Mr. Chair. I felt that it was a policy issue, but it was a change from service to education. And so they just had to rearrange the bureaucracy. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I've just been advised that you quoted the number of Representative Markwart, 500 and some enrolled, that's probably at the present time, but if you look through this booklet, you see that since the program started, there have been over 3,000 that have taken part in the program since it originated. But I imagine some are no longer with it and so forth. But I think the 500 and some is probably the present group that they're working with. So, Representative Ekin, did you have something briefly?
Yeah, just briefly. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Bezek. It's nice to see you here today. And I just wanted to commend you for the work that you're doing and trying to help out some of your fellow farmers as well in this effort. I think that it's important to realize that we need to focus not just on the number of cows in the state, but the number of farmers. And we certainly want to save the smaller family farmers that we have in existence yet. We're losing lots of our farmers. And we certainly want to save and continue creating more farms, the type of which Mr. Bezek has. I've been out to Mr. Bezek's farm. And he has a breakfast on the farm every summer, and you can see the quality of work that goes on in these smaller, locally owned, family operated farms, and the type of what they contribute to the community, and it's a wonderful community building experience. This breakfast on the farm, lots of people show up for it. So again, Mr. Bezek, thanks for coming, and I commend you on your work.
Thank you, Representative Ekin, and I think that's probably more of a statement than a question. But thank you, Mr. Bezek, for the interesting presentation, and We have three other topics on our program, and we have about 45 minutes, so if we kind of keep that in mind as we go forward. The next presenter we have is Bill Rohlkamp from Lewiston, and he's going to talk a little bit about the manure digester loan program, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Rohlkamp, and if you want to state your name for the record and who you represent, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to thank the House members for scheduling some time to hear about policy priorities of Minnesota that are important to the Minnesota dairy industry. My name is Bill Rohlkamp. I operate two dairies near Lewiston, Minnesota. I also serve on the board of directors for Minnesota Milk, and I'm also serve as vice chairman of Southeast Ag Alliance. Minnesota Milk represents 2,500 dairy farm families across the state and also over 300 industry partners like our local veterinaries, local suppliers, equipment dealers, and our cooperatives also support Minnesota Milk as associate members. Minnesota Milk provides dairy producer leadership for our industry. We are the voice of the Minnesota dairy farmers. Southeast Ag Alliance members are made up of a cross-section of livestock and crop producers, plus industry partners such as equipment dealers, suppliers, financial institutions, consultants, and other people concerned about agriculture, the future of agriculture in our state. The mission of Southeast Ag Alliance is to educate people and elected officials on important agricultural issues that are important to our communities and to the environment, and support one another in their efforts to renew and modernize their businesses so that they can meet their goals. We work very closely with Minnesota Milk on issues that impact dairy farmers in Southeast Minnesota. Today you'll hear from three different milk producers, each of whom have somewhat different experiences and come from different parts of our state, but who share a commitment to improving our industry. With your help, we want to improve milk quality, operational efficiencies, which leads to increased profitability, and we want to ensure our neighbors that we are good stewards of the environment, that we want to protect our soil and water. There are four specific legislation initiatives which you'll hear about today, and there are two general issues for which bills have not yet been introduced that we expect will be raised this session. One of these bills that I'm very interested in is HF 1670, which would extend the interest-free status loan for development of on-farm digesters. These systems capture methane gas to produce power on the farm and for our neighbors. I am currently working on a methane digester project for my proposed area in Dodge County. The interest-free financing helps to ensure a return on what will be a sizable investment. Alternative energy development is an important new way for rural residents to generate income. The technology is proven, these systems are in operations, and farmers are selling power to their rural cooperatives or investment-owned utilities in greater Minnesota. My methane digester system will produce approximately 3.5 megawatts of power, which is enough power to serve about 400 homes with renewable electric energy. The investment for my system is estimated to be approximately $1.6 million, which is a significant commitment, and the interest-free financing is important to making this transaction a profitable venture for the farmer. I hope those of you on the Agricultural Finance Committee will support HF 1670 when it comes before that committee this session. Two other issues I will mention quickly are the initiatives to encourage sale of milk and other healthy drinks in our schools alongside soda pop and during school hours in place of soda pop. There has been much publicity about the problem of child obesity. Healthier diets and more activity are necessary if we are going to avoid huge health costs to treat the health conditions that affect overweight kids who become overweight adults. You will hear more about this issue as the session goes on. We understand a bill is being prepared which will have schools offer milk and other healthy drinks in their vending machines, and the milk producers will support such initiatives. My final point relates to our responsibility to be good environmental stewards. Where there are cows, there is alfalfa. As we lose dairy farms, we also lose fields of alfalfa. Alfalfa protects farmland from wind and water erosion, helping keep our rivers and streams clean and clear. Without dairies and alfalfa, the environment and our rural communities, especially in southeastern Minnesota, suffer. Minnesota Milk believes that environmental regulations, a stick, in parentheses, should be tempered with proper incentives, the carrot, to achieve maximum benefit for our environment in the most efficient way. Minnesota Milk has developed and is currently implementing an environmental quality assurance program that could be used as a model for assuring our neighbors and our state officials that dairy producers meeting the standard are excellent environmental stewards. Minnesota Milk supports incentive funding, which provides a carrot to assist livestock producers in making environmental improvements on their farm. We will continue working with MPCA, the county and township officials, to see that our environmental regulation framework develops responsible farm practices which farmers can reasonably implement without cost restraints or time delays. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. And at this time, I'll take any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Okamp, and I think I think we're all aware of the issues you're talking about, and I think the committees are, planning to try and address some of them as best we can. Does anybody else have questions of Mr. Okamp? If not, thank you for your testimony and for being here today with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. The next on our program is Dana Allen of Eota, Minnesota. The title is Dairy Modernization Grants. I'm not sure if that's, but whatever testimony you wish to provide for us, welcome to the committee and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Swenson and committee members. I'm actually going to, my testimony will include both the modernization grants as well as the dairy investment tax credits. So we'll do it in one fell swoop. Good afternoon, and I also wanted to thank Chairman Swenson for the resolution designated today as Dairy Day at the Capitol with the number of dairy producers that we have here. It's important that you recognize, it's important to us that you're recognizing the importance of the dairy industry. I operate a dairy farm in Eota, Minnesota with my parents and my brother. I also serve on the board of directors for the Minnesota Milk Producers Association. Our industry has been in decline for 30 years, and most Minnesotans have no idea how much has been lost to this state in terms of job, economic activity, and tax revenue because of this long decline. Not only does the dairy industry suffer when a dairy farm family is unable to invest in their future, but the state suffers as well. In 1985, we had 22,000 farm families milking over 900,000 cows. Today, we only have 6,000 farm families milking 480,000 cows. This dramatic loss of Minnesota dairy revenues continues while demand for milk nationally has continued to grow. Our continuing loss of dairy farms and milk production has resulted in the loss of hundreds of millions of dollars of tax revenues. Future projections have only 4,600 dairy families left in 2007. With this backdrop, I want to focus a few minutes on one of the most important remedies to our industry's ills, which is capital. Flexible, low-interest capital, capital to improve operations, capital to expand herds, capital to allow young people to get into the dairy business. Minnesota Milk representatives have repeatedly met with the Department of Agriculture and Department of Employment and Economic Development officials during the summer and fall of 2003, and even during the weeks leading up to the beginning of the 2004 session. Our attention was focused on creating a dairy investment fund modeled after the Wisconsin Milk Volume Production Program. The challenge the department officials and the milk producers all faced was finding a source of funding to capitalize the dairy investment fund. We may have found a way to start the fund, but we will likely need to come back to the legislature in 2005, hopefully with the support of the Pawlenty administration, for a specific appropriation for the fund. In the meantime, the approach is to allow local revolving loan funds to contribute a portion of their capital for dairy lending, hence recognizing dairy as an economic driver within a local community. The Department of Employment and Economic Development has identified counties where local government has received Minnesota Investment Fund or federal small cities grants for business development. These communities retain these funds to reloan to other businesses. In some cases, there are relatively few new business deals in which to invest the local loan funds, and the funds remain in local accounts. So we identified several counties where these funds are in place, and there is a significant number of dairy operations. In these areas, we would like to make dairy loans for herd expansion or to improve facilities and make those both eligible activities. The local revolving loan funds would be authorized to invest a portion of their funds in a pool with other local funds. The dairy investment fund would be administered by the Rural Finance Authority, but the local funds would retain title and the right to recall their funds after a specified period. Loans would be made at below market rates with an emphasis on herd expansion, including financing cows for new producers. The discussions with department officials has also taken into account the concept of selling these dairy expansion or improvement loans in the secondary market in order to immediately recapitalize the fund. State funds will be important to make this recapitalization strategy work, since this type of lending is not conventional and the secondary market will almost certainly want compensation for the lower interest rate and for the uncertainty of purchasing loans which are not seasoned and which do not have a significant payment history. We appreciate the fact that the state agencies have been working on this issue with us and that so many legislators have expressed interest in helping to find new ways to finance the recovery of dairy production in Minnesota. Another approach which has been proposed is to provide tax credits for investment in dairy operations. While the Dairy Investment Fund will help finance newer operations and herd expansion of existing operations, the tax credit approach provides an incentive for existing operators to make incremental improvements in their operations. Better, cleaner, more productive dairies are important to the milk processing companies, the people who work there, and the communities in which they are located. The tax credit proposal outlined in House File 1668 provides an incentive for existing dairies to improve or expand. Attractive lending rates for herd expansion, including new operations, is one way to increase production. We hope you will help us with these financing incentives this year and next as we work to improve financing arrangements for the industry. Thank you, Chairman Swenson and committee members.
Thank you, Ms. Allen. And I think these are both issues that, you know, that we're aware of and we're working on and hoping to get some action from the legislature on. I'm not sure if it'll all happen this year or not, but certainly there are things that that could be beneficial. Is there any questions of Ms. Allen in your presentation? If not, thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Then we have Mr. Paul Kent. Is he here? Of the Representative Hager, did you have a question of the previous?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. But we have extra time left. While I'd like to revisit with Mr. Bissig.
Thank you, Will. Okay, we'll see you how we come out. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kent, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman Swenson and committee members. My name is Paul Kent. I'm a dairy farmer about an hour north of here in Mora, Minnesota. First of all, I'd like to thank you very much for your support to the dairy diagnostic teams and the planning grants in the past few years. I think they've been a tremendous help for our dairy industry. And as it's been pointed out, if 3,000 farms have used them and there's 6,000 left, that's 50%. It's a pretty good benchmark on that. I have farmed on an hour north of here. We have my wife Jill and I have a 480-acre dairy farm. We milk about 70 cows. I've lived there all my life. I've driven tractors since I was 5 years old, and we've been milking cows on that farm for over 50 years now, and personally I've been milking them for over 40. So it's a third-generation farm, and Jill and I agree that it's been a great place to raise our four daughters, and I wouldn't trade that lifestyle with, I think, any other occupation, and I hope that we continue to have that availability to our new generation farmers and the young people growing up. In the late 1960s, my father and I built a new 80-cow freestall barn with a double-four milking powder. That was the dairy initiatives of those days. It was, we had busloads of people from the university who came and looked at our operation as a new modern operation. And we went into a successful partnership and it provided a good living for both of our families. We had great cooperation in our growth with the planning for the new technology that went in our new barn and our new parlor. We had plenty of opportunity for financing. We had only a few permits to get, and it was easy to get them and get them in place. And when we were done, everything went smoothly. How times have changed. Now, we all know that capital for dairy farming is really hard to get, and it's much more greater need of capital, much more larger dollar amounts that we're talking about nowadays. There's a lot more permits to get. And when you think you have everything in place and you've met all your requirements, someone can come in and put a stop to your operation or delay it and make it a really highly costly proposition for your plans, and that shouldn't happen. Dairying is important to our state's economy and our rural communities, and we must do everything possible to create an atmosphere of cooperation to strengthen this economic engine. My average-sized dairy generates from $6,000 to $8,000 a year for local and state taxes, and that doesn't take in consideration the dollars that I spend in my local community that they say is magnified seven times over, and all the tax dollars that are generated from that. That's just the tax dollars that I personally pay. So if you'd multiply this figure by our 6,000 dairies in our state, that amounts to $36 million a year tax base, and that's really on the conservative side. Our dairy farm numbers have dropped from 13,500 in 1993 to around 6,000 currently. That's more than a 50% decline in 10 years, and economically we cannot let this trend continue. Each 1,000 cows in a community area contributes approximately $2.7 million in farm income and employs 12 people. And Minnesota's livestock industry supports more than 150,000 jobs in our outstate to other occupations, and we all know that we need to keep and create new jobs, not let them disappear. So if the cows go, it's not only the farmers that go, it's also the supporting industries, the processing plants, the feed dealers, the veterinarians. There's a lot more jobs that disappear also. So what can we do to strengthen our industry and even create a bigger tax base? Well, all of our dairy industry groups have gotten together this fall and discussed these issues. The Minnesota Milk Producers and the Dairy Leaders Roundtable, Minnesota Association of Cooperatives, we've gotten together and we've got an idea that we think can do just that, and it's called the Investment Tax Credit. It's House File 1668 and Senate File 1940. Most of our dairies in Minnesota have barns and facilities that are 30 and 40 years or more old. They need to be updated and modernized and refurbished. These growth initiatives would generate new jobs or more jobs for our neighboring carpenters, feed dealers, equipment dealers, and would also generate more growth in being able to add cows, and would add to our personal incomes after we were done expanding and refurbishing our farms. It's great to have a governor that realizes the economic impact of dairying in our state, and I think the formation of the Livestock Advisory Task Force is a great example of his need, or his the credit that he gives to the dairy industry in the economic value that it has to our state. And to quote him, He formed it to help us to get a better idea of what Minnesota needs to do to ensure animal agriculture is a healthy part of our economy for decades to come. And this is an encouraging sign that we can do something that our dairy industry to help it grow and survive in our state. I look at the Dairy Investment Tax Credit to be very similar to our governor's jobs programs to promote job creation in rural Minnesota and to strengthen jobs in rural Minnesota. And I know we're going to have a battle in getting this legislation passed because we're in a budget crunch, and people are going to say that it's going to cost the state tax dollars. But I would argue that it's actually, in the long run, going to be increased tax dollars to the state, not only through the extra jobs it can create by helping putting all of the industry people that help to put new building supplies and stalls and equipment into barns, and but also for keeping the job economy strong in the rural areas that provide for the farms after they're expanded or built. Let's face it, if the cows go, all those jobs are gone. And there's, especially this year, with the first 6 months of this last year, we had record low prices. There aren't going to be very many dairy farmers in the state that are going to be paying any kind of income taxes this coming year. So if we would pass this legislation, it really isn't going to affect our budgets this year. By the time it will affect them the following year, we will be already putting more investment in our farms and reaping some of the benefits of those expenses, and personally as farmers reaping the benefits of the increased efficiencies and increased milk production, that in the long run I think we'll find that this will be actually a tax-based increase to our state, not a tax-based cost. So this is really my personal drive. I'm chairman of the Dairy Committee of the Minnesota Association of Cooperatives, so we've had a lot of discussion over this. I've talked to a lot of dairy farmers about this. I personally know my facilities need updating. It's really hard for me. I've got kids in college to think of putting money into my facilities without maybe getting some kind of a tax break or some incentive that would not only help my situation, but in the long run, help the economic situation of the state, too, by creating a better industry. I know there's a lot of people in my particular situation with older facilities that need to invest. And let's face it, when we invest in an industry, that's what's going to make the tax dollars come in. We have to be especially mindful also of the processing plants and the feed dealers and the whole infrastructure that could go away if dairy disappears in our state. We can't let that happen. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify on this subject, and it's near and dear to my heart, and I hope that we can get this accomplished. I'd be glad to take any questions now, Mr. Swenson.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could get a quick economic lesson here in this. We're down to 50% of the dairy farms that we had 10, 15 years ago, and yet I heard the consumption and demand is up, and any time you look at when supply is down, demand is up, price goes up. And I guess my question is, the other dairy states, are they experiencing the same loss in dairy farms? Is this a national type of thing? And why would prices be down when, supply is down and demand is up? What's causing that? And I know it's out of our state control here.
Mr. Kemp?
It's a very regionalized phenomenon of where dairy is disappearing and growing. If you would look, you'd see Wisconsin is declining, and they're doing very similar bills in their legislature this year with the investment tax credit and dairy investment opportunities for their farmers to try to turn that around. Minnesota is another state that has declined production. California has actually increased production. They're still expanding out there. They have economies of size and scale, and a little. They have less investment per cow. When you go out there and visit their large dairies, they don't have to put up the barns and the infrastructure in our personal dairy farms that we do around here. So they have less investment per cow. Although we do have advantages too. We have abundant water. We have cheap and abundant food supplies for our cattle. We have a great grain industry in our state. We can grow alfalfa hay. We have advantages that we can compete with those people. They do have advantages of size and scale, and that's one of the reasons why you see dairy decreasing here and increasing there. It's also very much a lifestyle issue. If you look at our dairy industry, I think the average size dairy farm now is about 87 cows, and just 20 years ago it was probably 45, 50 cows or less. And many of those people never got off their farm, you know, in 10 years. And the people that are in dairying nowadays really would like to get away for a weekend or take a normal vacation like normal employed people do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually more of an issue, is that, you know, that change in times of size of dairy farms. A 40 or 60 cow dairy can make a good living in Minnesota just as much as they, as easy as they could 30 years ago. But they have to do all the work themselves, and it's become a lifestyle issue besides economies of scale issue. Anyway, that's part of your answer, that not all of the whole country is seeing this decline in production. Pennsylvania is more so than we are, and they're getting kind of squeezed out because of urban pressure and the people moving into the countryside and just land base disappearing. People are finding it easier to go to some other state where there's a better crop land-based and do the dairying if they want to be in dairying. The other issue that you brought up is supply and demand and what the price. Right now, demand has been growing. When you look at what happened with 911 and shortly after that, demand dropped. And it was, we had demand for Mott's cheese that grew at 2-3% a year for like 6 or 8 years straight. And after 911, that flattened out and actually declined a few percent, put a tremendous strain on the whole cheese market business, which let the cheese market prices fall, which in turn had our prices fall to 25-year lows. And that's just kind of turning around now. Cheese sales are going up. Fluid milk sales are going up in, a lot because of these individual milk cartons in the and the big push to get more milk in schools, and the news that milk is a healthy food that can be used in a weight loss program, and actually helps people lose weight easier if you use low-fat dairy products. So there's a lot of different issues. The pricing whole mechanism is very complicated, and sometimes you wonder if there's any rhyme or reason to it. But right now, as a dairy farmer, I'm very encouraged at what the next year or so will bring, because it does appear that butter stocks are down, cheese stocks are coming down, demand is going up, and there's cattle numbers are down, and it really looks like the next year or so is going to be good for us, especially in light of what the last 2 years have brought us.
Probably. I think I'm going to have to move on. Mr. Markworth, I think a short answer to your statement is, you talked, well, Minnesota's production has been going down. Nationwide, it's been going up. But, I mean, that's, you know, you talk about the supply and demand and the price. I mean, nationally, hasn't been had the same situation we've had in Minnesota. But it, you know, there's like a lot of factors. Representative Eakin, we have a couple more people would like to be on the program, so if we can move along, but if go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kent, I was just going to ask, you're saying that in California the milk production has been increasing in California. What about the number of dairy farmers in California? Has that been increasing or decreasing?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Eakin.
Mr. Kent.
It has been pretty stable, increasing slightly. A lot of the dairies out there have family members. You know, even though they are large dairies, some of them milk 10,000 cows, they're still family dairies. And it's pretty essentially all family people that that are running them and in many of the aspects of their operations. And as they get kids that want to get into the business, a lot of them will put up a new barn and a new parlor and set their daughter or son up in a business, and you know, that's kind of an extension of a business, but they aren't losing the number of farms like we are here. They are losing some of their smaller farms, but not nearly as to the extent as we are in the upper Midwest.
Representative Tremba, I do have a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr.
Chair. A short, quick one.
How much do the milk protein concentrates, how much milk are they displacing for our needs in the United States?
Mr. Kemp, do you have an answer?
Yes, Mr. Swenson. I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm sitting here thinking I should have brought that into the piece when I'm talking about price. The milk protein concentrates that are being imported without restriction, because there's not a good definition of what a milk protein concentrate is, so there's not a tariff that's specifically put against the amount coming in, is about 3% of our total production, which is around 170 billion pounds of milk equivalent. The reason those figures are important, generally if we have a 2% either increase or decrease in the total production in the United States, that can mean a $2 to $4 hundredweight difference in our price that we get on the farm. And it's more the perception whether supplies are going to be growing or falling than what the supplies actually are. And so if we have MPCs displacing 3% of our production, it does have a tremendous impact on what our price is and what our economy is as a dairy industry.
Follow-up question.
Yeah. Representative Trimble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How much does price of what you get for a hundredweight of milk affect farmers wanting to stay into business?
Mr. Kent, do you care to respond?
Well, it's like any other business. If you can't pay the bills, a lot of them are forced not to stay in the business. And then on the other hand, there's a lot of people that have been in the business for many years, like myself, where we can pay our bills, but our equity is going down, and we're living on our equity. And at some time, you kind of draw the line with, you know, how far do you want to go with losing the equity that you've built up over 30 or 40 years, or do you want to try to do things to modernize and get better and get your higher production, which can turn things around, or in a lot of cases, sell out and do something else.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Kent, for your testimony and for being here and sharing your thoughts with us today. Tom Peterson, did you wish to comment? I'm going to say, if you could keep your remarks to about 5 minutes. I have a couple of students that came here today and asked to be on the program, and I would like to give them 5 or 10 minutes if we can. We only have about 15 minutes remaining in our time here, but so welcome to the committee, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my name is Tom Peterson. I'm Director of Government Relations of the Minnesota Farmers Union. I'll keep it really brief, and I appreciate the opportunity to come here today to talk about dairy policy. I had the choice to be here testifying on CREP in the Senate, and I wanted to be here because, you know, price is a big thing. You know, the one Mr. Bisek talked about price is being important, and what affects price, and what we can do as legislators and individuals to affect price. Mary Ellen, Representative Otremba just talked about the MPCs, and our National Farmers Union says that the MPCs may be as high as 5.8% of displaced powder concentrate in the country that's gone unchecked. And Senator Dayton and Senator Coleman have a bill to address that, and it's moving forward in the Senate and moving forward in the House. And I think that's very important legislation. You know, we're negotiating Australian free trade agreement right now, or it's done, you know, and there's going to be a lot of issues with that. And I encourage everybody to look at that, because it doesn't address MPCs, And so what can we do about price, you know, and you know, whether it's property taxes at a state level, we always say, oh, state legislature, we can't do anything about price, you know, but what can we do? You know, property taxes, health care, all affect dairy farmers. Very important. I go out to talk to a dairy farmer. I try to tell him what I'm doing on dairy issues. He says, you know, my health care costs are killing me. You know, so it's, you know, and we're facing a new issue right now with a lot of dairy farms that Representative Otremba has been working on, too, and life estates. And I encourage everybody to look at that, because many of the farmers here I've talked to today, in order to pass their farm and keep their family on the farm, have used a life estate. But I'm here today to commend to Representative Erdahl for some of his initiatives that he's come up with, and more specifically the Dairy Investment Tax Credit. It's been interesting when I visit with farmers in the community where I live in Pine City and Graston, and I go to the mill on Saturday to get feed, and I talk to the farmers there, and they always like give me a hard time, like, what are you doing, or what do we got going on, is there anything coming down the pike that can help us? So last Saturday when I was in there, I get an opportunity to tell them about the tax credit, you know, and kind of tell them what's going on here. You know, 10% on the investment. I read down this thing. There's something here for everybody. Fences, watering facilities, feed storage, bulk tanks. You know, a lot of good things there that may actually help, you know, farmers. And consider it. You know, on first flush, they'll say, well, so I got to spend money to make money, or I got to spend money to get this. You know, is what they first say, you know. But after they consider it a little bit, you know, it's kind of interesting. I have more questions, and it's a real positive thing. So I support that, and I encourage legislators to move forward on that, because, you know, as we look at, you know, farms and what's, you know, a lot of times, I'll be honest, I concentrate a lot of times on smaller farms. I'm not going to deny that or anything. But you look at farms in Minnesota, 6,000 dairy farms, and we say 96% milk 200 cows or less, but 60%. In Minnesota, nearly 60% still milk 50 cows or less. You know what? The area I drove, you know, I go home to the farm every night, and on my way from my house to the interstate, I passed, you know, five dairy farms, and they all milk between 20 and, say, 200 cows. And, you know, it's interesting, but I want to make sure that there's support, and we concentrate, too, and we put time into those folks, too. Because they're important, and a lot of times they get the message, you got to get bigger, you got to get out. They're doing okay, a lot of them. They're fine milking, you know, the amount that they milk. They want to keep doing that. Yes, some of them do have off-farm income. A lot of them probably have off-farm income, and that's important, but that's a part of it, and I hope that everybody considers that, and I think the Dairy Investment Tax Credit takes that into consideration. I think some of the other bills do also. We've heard today a lot, one last thing, about how many farms quit. You know, I don't know how many people I've heard say today. I asked the department about 2 weeks ago how many have started. Are there people getting into dairying? Because I know two people that have got in and started dairying in the last year. My East Central Dairy Supply says in our area there's been four new dairy farms in the last year. We don't talk about that enough. How many have started or passed on, you know, the farm to somebody else in the last year? And the numbers I've got on the sheets here, you know, that I'm still kind of going through and everything, show us that 135 people have started dairying in the last year. And you look at the size ranges all over the place with 75, 40, 20, 35, 30, 100 grade A's, 35 grade B's. And these are rough numbers, but they're ballpark figures. But keep that in mind, because it's important when we're tailoring programs, we're talking about beginning farmers and where farmers are going to get in and what kind of programs we're going to have to help people get in and where they're going to start. I think it's important to consider, you know, those numbers and those facts. So with that, I thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about dairy today.
You know, thank you, Mr. Peterson. And then it's not on your members list and on your agenda, but we have there's two students from Ridgewater College, Technical College, that that came today and asked if they could have a short presentation. Gentlemen, welcome to the committee. We have only 5 minutes left of our allotted time, but they have a, I think they have a prepared handout here that I'll ask to be passed out. But so I'll let you get right into it and state your name for the record and just. Like I said, we have 5 minutes left of our allotted time. So if you wish to just make a few comments to the committee, boy, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman Swenson and committee members for taking the opportunity to hear us here this afternoon. My name is Matthew Willenbring. I'm currently a second-year student at Ridgewater College in Wilmer, Minnesota, majoring in farm operations and management with a dairy emphasis. Following graduation this spring, I plan to return home to the family dairy farm of 48 cows in a tie stall facility and farm with my father.
Thank you for letting me come today. My name is Carl Olson. I'm from Hanover, Minnesota. I'm currently at Ridgewater College, going to graduate with the dairy management this spring here. I am going to be returning to the family dairy of my girlfriend, or my fiance now, excuse me, my fiance, we are going to rent the neighbor's barn down the road from the home farm because I cannot return to the home place right away. So we'll be renting a facility down there milking 47 cows.
Theodore Roosevelt once stated, "Do what you can with what you have where you are." Perhaps Mr. Roosevelt was referring to the fact that by working together in support of each other, great feats can be accomplished. So it is that we present to you some thoughts and concerns regarding the future of the dairy industry and ask your assistance in implementing them. For the health of our school-aged children, we need to have milk dispensing machines alongside pop and sweetened fruit drink machines in our school settings, giving the students a healthy alternative to soda and sugar-saturated drinks. Ideally, as recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics, all pop machines should be ousted from our schools. An analysis of the diets of more than 3,000 children, published in the January issue of Journal of Adolescent Health, shows a positive effect on children's health when flavored milks and yogurts are chosen instead of sodas and sweetened drinks. The study shows that children ages 6 to 17 who consume more than 6 to 8 ounces of flavored dairy products, such as milks, yogurts, ice creams, puddings, each day took in more calcium, folate, and iron, fewer added sugars, and less saturated fat than kids who drink 16 to 25 ounces of sodas and sweetened fruit drinks every day. So how can the state of Minnesota help? Schools receive a substantial fee from soft drink companies when they allow them to place pop machines in their schools. There needs to be an incentive that will entice schools to actively seek having milk vending machines placed alongside the pop machines, with milk priced competitively with pop. Perhaps the state could step into the ring and offer to pick up the difference between the monetary return schools receive from the pop and sweetened drink machines compared to the return they would get from milk machines. This would be advantageous in two ways. Number one, milk machines will provide a healthy choice for our students. And number two, more fluid milk will be sold for the dairy industry. The school lunch program should also be encouraged to offer flavored milk in plastic bottles, as it is a proven fact that given a choice, students prefer that flavored milk in a plastic bottle over the traditional paper carton containing white milk.
Our second option is to help our new farmers, including both young and old, with their financial situations. We all know that the financial standings of a business is the most important issue to success. Perhaps by allowing our young farmers to enroll in the Farm Business Management Program free for 5 years will help enable them to get off on a good start at managing their farm's finances. Chances are good that the young farmer will continue to enroll in the program.
Another important issue which needs to be addressed to help all of our agriculture producers as well as milk processors is a growing number of farms leaving production for various reasons and remaining stagnant. The state needs to look at ways to encourage small dairies as well as large dairies, since it is obvious that large dairies alone cannot produce the volume of milk required to make Minnesota one of the top three dairy states. The state might look at creating a retiring or retired farmer, young farmer program that matches up young people interested in farming with farmers who are nearing retirement or are retired and still reside on a farmstead fit for production agriculture. When many producers retire from dairying, they sell the cows, leaving the dairy facilities empty, rent out the land, and continue to live on the farm. There's nothing wrong with this choice. However, that empty dairy facility is an opportunity for a young person to enter a career in dairying. A tax break or tax credit for the owner of the farm who works with a young and ambitious entrepreneur dairy producer needs to be part of this incentive. This program would definitely help utilize existing dairy facilities and improve the odds that a young dairy producer will get off to a running start in the dairy industry.
For example, if a farm owner is willing to rent their facilities for less than $6 a stall, their income could be free of Minnesota income tax and possibly reduce property tax. This will help the young farmer by lowering facility rent and allow them to spend more money building their herd and improving their milk production.
Another area of consideration is that of upgrades and renovations. A lot of existing dairy operations could benefit by upgrades to their dairy equipment and facilities. We feel that the state could help by offering an investment tax credit for producers who modernize and upgrade their facilities. There would need to be a limit set as to the amount of investment that will qualify for this credit, such as $50,000 to $100,000 worth of improvements. By having producers improve their operation, they will generate more income and continue to be competitive in the dairy business. This will also be beneficial to Minnesota in that the state will retain jobs in the industries that rely on the dairy producers.
Another issue that we are facing in the dairy industry is our current somatic cell count. The average somatic cell count up for Minnesota is around 400 cells per milliliter. We are one of the highest somatic cell states in the union. An option worth looking at is eliminating volume premiums paid to large dairy operators. Everyone always says that one needs both large and small dairy farmers to succeed. The volume premium money will then be used to increase the somatic cell premiums paid for the farmers. This will help the farmers strive to improve their somatic cell count. A lower somatic cell count for Minnesota produced milk will allow us to be more competitive as a state in the marketplace.
It is extremely hard for us to stand up in front of you here today and tell you this. The dairy farmers in the great state of Minnesota have become discouraged because of suppressed milk prices and an increased workload required to make a family living.
Today, along with your help and support, let us bring back the pride we once held in being the finest dairyland in the upper Midwest. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to listen to our concerns. Once again, thank you.
And thank you for coming today. I want to commend you for having the interest in the dairy industry to prepare this and come down here today and ask to make a presentation. I want to take a look at your thoughts and the things you're bringing forward today. And I wish you best good luck in the future. And if you're planning to go into the dairy industry, I hope it's successful in your endeavors. We are out of time. Representative Heigerken, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you again. Thank you, Mr. Chair, but thank you again for visiting my room here the other day. We had a nice visit, but a very good presentation. And the key word that you brought up was help. And again, I just want to go back to what Representative Harder had said, that we do some things for the dairy, but it's very little in comparison to what we do for some of the other industries in the state of Minnesota. But that will be revisited again. And again, we talked about the dairy development program, and again, it has problems, and much that was not brought out. There is a waiting list in my district to get on that program. It's not that people are not signing up for it. In my area, we have a waiting list, Mr. Swenson, to get on that dairy program itself. So it's working, and we need more money. Thank you.
Thank you. And members, with that, that concludes our business today. Just remind the members that next week we'll be taking up some bills. We have several bills that have come to the committee, to our committee now, and next week, and I think the next weeks we'll be starting to take action on some of the bills that have come forward to our committee. So with that, meeting's adjourned, and thank you all.